Hello, Degrassi fans, and welcome to the Degrassi Kid Podcast, where each week we break down the history and impact of our favorite teen TV show. I'm Jocelyn, and this week I have a question for you. What's your favorite Degrassi mini? Back in 2005, Degrassi pioneered a brand new web series called Degrassi Minisodes. They were short stories that would take you even deeper into the show. They might follow a current storyline about Alex and Paige as they navigate a relationship. They might ask questions like, what if Craig dated Emma? Or they might do a parody of a popular TV show or movie like Lost or Pirates of the Caribbean. The web series idea was so popular that it actually continued into Degrassi Next Class and lasted a total of 11 seasons. But by this time, web content was everywhere. Degrassi was streaming online through Netflix. They had a Tumblr page, a Twitter page, a Facebook, a YouTube, Instagram. Online social media content was everywhere. But almost 25 years ago, in 2001, Degrassi was pioneering the idea of web content altogether. Their website, Degrassi.tv, cost them $1.2 million to build because most of the ideas they came up with hadn't even existed yet online. I got really curious about this. I've seen every single minisode that Degrassi's ever made, but I didn't really know much about the history of it. Like, how did Degrassi even come up with the idea for web content at all? How did it change when online videos became the norm and almost expected? And did I really, truly, actually find a Degrassi fan who made one of the most popular minisodes? This week, we're breaking down the history and impact of Degrassi's minis, and it's only going to happen here on a brand new episode of the Degrassi Kid Podcast. Hold the key. Should be there for you, whatever it is, you know she'll pull through, whatever it takes, or whatever it takes, kids got you.
What were you thinking? You had the actress playing Manny walk around in a thong and flash every dude in school.
Isn't that what you did?
And if that girl that you had playing me wasn't turning tricks in a van down in the ravine, she was stuffing her pockets with French fries. Nice depiction.
I thought so. Is that how you look at us, dude? The guy playing me looked like he was a moron, and all he did was play with stickers. That's whack! Look, everything on that screen was the truth. I can't believe you guys don't remember it that way.
You called Stews the Peter Stone is a god band. I thought we were a team.
The girl you had playing Ashley was nothing more than eye candy on Craig's arm.
Look, I don't know what these guys are talking about. Craig was awesome, man.
Hot dudes unite.
Yes, we're attractive.
Look, I made a movie about the real teen experience.
Are you crazy? No one, and I mean no one, not one soul in a million years will ever want to watch a movie about Degrassi.
Are you sure about that?
That clip is from a minisode called What If Peter Made a Movie? The idea follows Peter Stone as he goes on to become a famous Hollywood director and makes a movie about his life in high school at Degrassi. The webisode stands out because very soon after this mini, we do get the movie Degrassi Goes Hollywood, a nod to the fact that we really do want to watch a movie about Degrassi. What If Peter Made a Movie was actually the 50th webisode that Degrassi released online, and we're going to talk about it more later. It plays a pretty integral part to the history of the show. But for now, we have to go back to the beginning, back to when the idea was first started. It was around 2005 when Stephen Stone, one of Degrassi's executive producers, approached Stefan Brogren about the idea. Stefan is known to us as Principal Simpson or Snake, but at the time, he was an actor who was interested in getting more involved behind the scenes. Stephen pulled Stefan aside and told him he was coming up with an idea for little shorts for the internet or mobile phones. That was the language we were using at the time, Stefan said. Stephen told him, we don't know what it is yet, but I'd like you to be involved in this thing on the story side. Would you like to be a producer or a director or something? Stefan happily accepted the gig and he was paired up with Stephanie Cohen. Stephanie was a director on the series who turned to marketing and communications, but for now, she's the producer of a brand new web series called Degrassi Minisodes. We are going to learn more about this and walk through how Stefan, Stephen, and Stephanie created this series together. But first, we still have to go back even farther. we're not even close to the true beginning of the miniseries just yet. And that's because Degrassi wasn't the first series to do it. They weren't the first series to create web content for a TV show. In fact, it was Steven and Linda's other project called Riverdale. Riverdale. No, not the CW version based on Archie, Betty, and Veronica. I mean Riverdale, the Canadian TV series proudly produced by Linda Skyler and Steven Stone in 1997. Much like Degrassi, the name actually comes from a community in Toronto named Riverdale. Together, Linda and Steven set out to create the very first Canadian soap opera, which reflected the diverse and daily life of Canadians. While the show was eventually canceled, the series did come with some amazing accomplishments, like being one of the first to ever produce online web content in the 90s. Steven Stone details a lot of this story in his memoir called Whatever It Takes. He tells the story of how he met Raja Khanna, a law student who had dreams of creating a website and working online. He started a company called Snap Interactive, where Steven Stone became his first client. They had an agreement that Steven would recommend Snap Interactive to all of his lawyer friends who needed a website, and in return, Raja would do Steven's website for free. This partnership continued until the two were pioneering brand new projects together, like a digital website for Riverdale, the TV show. In today's standards, the website wasn't anything fancy. It had everything you would expect, like cast biographies, information on the characters, and updates about the show. But in 1997, this was huge, and the fact that they wanted to do a web series was even bigger. Raja said, "I convinced Steven that not only should we make a website for Riverdale, but we should make this crazy interactive soap opera that happens behind the scenes with the cast and crew." They were going to introduce the idea of streaming video online, which had never been done before. It was the very first year that they were planning Riverdale that a program called Real Player came out for the very first time, which allowed you to stream video on the web. Raja said, "We were right at the beginning of the leading edge of the whole thing." The fact that this technology had just been introduced and they were already coming up with a web series is a huge idea. So they began production as fast as they could and created 1-minute short episodes. The idea was to take the soap opera behind the scenes and film these short, scripted scenes about the cast and crew's life on set, matching the drama to the fictional episodes on TV. Raja said that Riverdale went on to win every web design award around the world. This idea was huge, and it was immediately recognized for its immense potential on the internet. However, it flopped. It totally failed. While the idea was leagues into the future, the technology just still wasn't there yet. This was back in the day of dial-up internet, so for one of these 60-second videos to load, you would have to wait up to 15 minutes. And once you got it loaded, you'd be watching a small, tiny video that was only a couple pixels wide. Even though Riverdale was taking in over 700,000 viewers a week and winning awards around the globe, almost no one watched their web series. Not even their super fans. Those are the crazy people like you and me. Raja said no normal person or regular fan of Riverdale even went to the website. Steven and I and everyone else at the company got drunk on the adrenaline of innovation. And then the show got canceled. A decision that almost caused Linda Skyler to quit television forever. I mean, picture this. She's just wrapped up production on Degrassi High, a show that everyone loved and was begging her to continue. She went out in the best way possible. She went out on a Degrassi High note. Then she starts production on a brand new series called Riverdale, the very first Canadian soap opera that's recognized for its huge potential. And now it's gone. She has no choice. It's just been taken away from her. And Steven just pioneered an idea that is so ahead of itself that it immediately fails and crumbles in execution. Riverdale is over, the website is over, and it seems the future is just too far away for an online web series. That is until 2001, when Degrassi, The Next Generation, changed it all. Degrassi.tv was on the leading edge of innovation. now it wasn't just cast biographies and character breakdowns. You had a website that was so interactive that television writers were role-playing characters on the website. Raja said, "We had so much fun working on Riverdale that we wanted to do it again, but this time we'd do it smarter and build on what we already learned. This time, the website would allow you to become a real Degrassi student. You could decorate your own locker, you could share photos, write commentary, take surveys, send D-mail or Degrassi mail. It was totally crazy. Keep in mind, the word blog hadn't even been invented yet, and both MySpace and Facebook were still years away from launching their own websites." Steven said, "These features were cutting edge at the time, and we wanted to have the Degrassi characters themselves be part of the ecosystem, so viewers could go online and interact with characters who were actually activated by scriptwriters, so their personas stayed consistent. Fans were encouraged to become a part of the Degrassi world in their own way." As I said, the website cost $1.2 million to build because of just how innovative it was. The structures for this just didn't even exist yet. And while now we know Degrassi.tv was a huge success, at the time, it was really hard to get people bought into the idea. They didn't really have the proof to show that this would work. In fact, they only had proof to show that it wouldn't work. And it was hard to convince people that this was even necessary to do. I mean, why waste so much money on a website? But in true Steven Stone fashion, he and Raja pitched their idea to the right people at the right time, and CTV hugely invested in their website. They even gave them even more money to go out and promote it. And when you watch the show, you can even catch at the end of every episode where it says www.degrassi.tv, encouraging fans who are watching the show to finish the series and go online to connect with Degrassi even further. But still, that's just the website. It would be another 4 years before the internet was finally ready for online webisodes. It's 2005, and Steven Stone had just approached Stefan Brogren about his idea. Immediately, Stefan was bought in. He had been a part of this show for 33 years. He truly understood Degrassi, its intention, its impact, and he had a great connection with the young cast. There was no one more perfect to take on this role than Stefan Brogren. But Stefan and Stephanie were still a little critical of the idea. They asked themselves, how long can a kid really stare at their phone? Little did they know. In the beginning, Stefan and Stephanie made rules for themselves. Like, the video can't be any longer than 30 seconds because we don't want people to get bored and click away. And the technology was still pretty limiting, so it came with some rules of its own. For example, they weren't able to just film something for TV and then put it online. They had to take into account that video was still very new online. If you tried to do a quick pan shot, which is when the camera moves quickly from the left or the right, the picture would become extremely pixelated and hard to watch. And if the cast was too far away from the camera, you wouldn't be able to see them. So they decided they would only make short videos, 30 seconds long, with a stable camera and close-up shots. And then we had to break those rules, Stephanie said. It just wasn't working. We came to realize it's all about storytelling more than the technology. And so they were finally ready. They finally began launching Degrassi's Minis. Between 1997 and 2001, a few short-form web series began popping up online. But Degrassi was still ahead of its time as they were the first show to ever use their main characters and main television sets for their web series. The web series also had this amazing effect on production. Stefan Brogren was pretty much only acting up until this point. This mini-sode role became the training grounds for him to go on and become a director. It actually led to a big break for him when Kevin Smith said he would only do the Degrassi Goes Hollywood movie if Stefan directed it. After that, Stefan became a director on the main series and still is directing new projects in 2024. It allowed for anyone on the cast or crew to try something new and experiment. There was an assistant cameraman who wanted to try out for director of photography, so he did it on the minisodes. One of the actors wanted to be a boom mic operator, so he did it on the minisodes. It was something that was fun and allowed everyone to experiment with something new. Stefan said that because he already had an understanding of directing, the minisodes were his playground. He could try different things, go a little crazy, and find out what worked for him. Steven put all of his faith in the Minnesota team and trusted them completely. He let them run with whatever ideas they came up with. In the beginning, Stefan would focus on directing and he would work with the writers to come up with new ideas for the minisodes. But by the second year, Stefan found his stride and began writing all of the minis on his own, with the help of his partner, Stephanie Cohen. Stephanie's main role was to take Stefan's ideas and make them workable. She would take his scripts and add structure to the dialogue, and because of her previous production experience, she was really good at understanding how to take his ideas and make them actually shootable. A standout moment was in season 7, when the network wanted something Degrassi-related for Halloween. That's when Stefan pitched the idea for one of the most iconic minisodes ever made, called Degrassi of the Dead.
Jimmy?
No!
If you are bit by one of these things, you will be infected.
We're interrupting this broadcast to bring Lake P report a strange epidemic.
People seem to be dying at an astronomical rate. Just having a little trouble pronouncing
the dead. Don't you know a zombie when you see it?
We're hearing reports that the victims were eating genetically modified fruits and vegetables.
Find somewhere safe. A church. A mosque. A school.
What if everyone at Degrassi were zombies? This minisode called Degrassi of the Dead was a game changer for the series. But first, let's be clear. The Degrassi minisodes are not considered canon. That means that whatever happens in the mini didn't actually happen to the characters in the show. Imagine it's like Degrassi, but in an alternate universe. And in this case, it's one where there's zombies. But at this point, the production value was getting so high that it started to feel like these minisodes were really part of the show. It was so well made that it didn't feel like the cast was just goofing off and having fun with these crazy scenarios. They actually took these crazy scenarios and took them seriously. What if the Degrassi kids really were zombies? What would that really look like? Stefan said, when I was directing the cast, I was telling them, you have to sell it as if you're dead serious, just like it's a real Degrassi episode. I think that's one of the rules of horror movies, that no matter how wild it gets, you have to play it as if it's real. For the very first time, this minisode was actually 4 minisodes put together. If played back to back, it was about 10 minutes long. This was the first of its kind in this genre. The hype around this minisode got so big that they actually filmed behind-the-scenes videos, cast interviews, toured the set. Degrassi of the Dead aired as a half-hour special on television. Stefan said it turned out better than anyone expected. It's scary, it's funny, and you get to see all your favorite characters in the most ridiculous situations. Here's a clip from the behind-the-scenes special with the actors who play characters like Peter, Paige, Spinner, Manny, Jimmy, and Ashley.
Zombies are attacking Degrassi! What are we gonna do?
Zombies are attacking the world, so where else do you go? You go to Degrassi, obviously.
I've never done a horror movie before, so this is like my first little taste of it.
It's a very active webisode. Before we started this scene, I came down to set and I was like, oh my god, like everything. They put so much detail. There's fingerprints on all the glass, the blinds are everywhere, there's garbage everywhere. I'm glad I don't have to clean it up.
I was just talking to Stefan, and it's not gonna be campy, it's gonna be like serious, which is kind of fun because I've always wanted to be in a horror movie.
This is the most intricate menu we've ever put together.
It was so cool this morning. I came in like a little later than everyone else and everyone was already done, and they all look incredible and they put so much work into it. Very fun, we don't get to do stuff like this all the time, so.
To understand the full context of this mini, I think we need to take it back to the first mini. It's 2005, and Degrassi's minisode writers have just asked the question, what if Sean came back to Degrassi? Later, Sean does return to the show, but that isn't until season 6. This minisode was the first Easter egg that Sean would come back at all, and it's the first episode. This was huge for fans of the show who were invested in seeing more of their favorite couples on screen. This mini, titled Don't You Forget About Me, consisted of 2 2-minute videos where we find out that Sean has come back to Toronto to start a bike business, reconnect with Emma, and officially end things with Ellie Nash, who assumes that he's there to see her. Because it's fictional and not a part of the show, we get to play around a bit, and we find out that Sean and Jay actually got matching tattoos of their ex-girlfriend's names. Jay got Alex's name tattooed, and Sean got Ellie's. Or so we think. We actually learned that Sean got Emma's name tattooed instead. I'm just saying, can you imagine being a fan of a TV show that writes this fantasy, dreamlike fan fiction about your two favorite characters and spends $1.2 million so you can see it? We are the luckiest fandom in the world. That's crazy. Anyway, Sean and Jay's tattoos are very obviously fake, and they're written on each other with permanent marker. They don't attempt to make it look like a real tattoo, which is honestly no big deal, but it does go to show you how much more seriously they start taking the minisodes once we get to that Degrassi of the Dead era. Here's a clip from Degrassi's first minisode, Don't You Forget About Me, where Jay catches Sean up on everything he missed at Degrassi.
Man, you chickened out. You bailed on everyone when things got too scary. Since you left, Spinner's Christianed out. All my friends are drug dealers whose names I don't even know. Good luck getting Alex back.
What, and all this is supposed to be my fault?
After this, the next few episodes line up pretty closely to the real events in the show. The minisode Notorious explores a flirtatious moment between Ellie Nash and Jimmy Brooks. Love Cats acknowledges that Alex was homophobic before coming out of the closet herself. And Hey Ladies explores a secret relationship between Emma and Peter that takes place behind Manny's back. Then it starts to get really fun. Degrassi starts introducing more What If episodes into the minis. What if Craig picked Emma? What if Jimmy was never shot? What if Liberty was Paige and Paige was Liberty? These episodes were hilarious, especially when they had two actors swap places. One of my favorites is when they do it with Jay and Emma. The two characters recreate the moment where Jay gives Emma a social disease, but they literally flip the script. Here's what I mean.
Jason Hogart, trying to save the world as usual?
Well, it's nothing, really.
You know, that's what I find so attractive about you. Your virtue, or whatever.
Thank you.
What do you say you and I blow off next class, hit the ravine, have some fun?
Me? The ravine? Gee, Emma, I have a book report.
Emma!
Hey, babe, where you been hiding?
Don't hey, babe, me. You gave me a social disease.
And if I recall, you loved every minute of it. Come on, big boy, let's party.
Season 2 takes some even crazier directions. One minisode is called Adam Lazara from Taking Back Sunday Married My Mom, which is about Spike, who is Emma's mom, marrying Adam Lazara from Taking Back Sunday. Adam was actually a huge Degrassi fan of the Degrassi High series and said that Spike was one of his favorite characters in the show, so he was incredibly nervous and excited to do the mini with Spike. Later, they do an episode called Beware of Heather Sinclair, which still never reveals her identity, but gives us insight into her evil internal monologue. And some of my favorites are the parodies they did of TV shows and movies at the time. They did a parody of MTV's Diary with Jay Hogart. They did Lost, 24 Hours, Napoleon Dynamite, Bring It On, The View, and a crossover with Linda and Steven's other show, Instant Star. However, the most popular minisode from this era has to be the one called I Won't Forget, which features J.T. York appearing in Liberty's bedroom after he's passed away.
How's the book?
It's okay. A little bland when it comes to the intricacies of the main character's relationship. I just hate how modern writers are so hesitant to enthrall us with the deeper history of our heroes. I mean, where's the next War and Peace?
I asked how the book was, not for a book report.
Sorry. It's just hard not to get passionate about some things.
Well, if you're one thing, it's passionate.
I think that might be one thing we have in common. I mean, when you put your mind to it, there's not much that can stop J.T. York.
That might be the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Well, it's true.
You know, I like these times. We just lie here, quietly.
I like it too.
I can't wait till we live together, so we can do this every night.
It's never gonna happen.
Why not?
Because you died, J.T.
Well, does that mean I can't come back and visit?
Whenever you want.
You promise you won't forget me?
How could I forget the great J.T. York?
Okay. Well, I gotta go. See you in your dreams.
You know it.
Oh, that one always pulls on my heartstrings. They also did a series called Dating for Dudes, which was a vlog-style video hosted by Danny and Derek, who give dating advice. Now, video resolution was starting to increase, and they could finally do these big sweeping pan shots and use these shaky handheld cameras to make it look like the Degrassi kids were filming their own videos. Season 3 started a wave of multi-part minisodes, which included Degrassi of the Dead, Party Etiquette, and Back to Degrassi. Instead of making four different minisodes, they'd make one minisode broken up into four parts. Though the standout again has to be this mini called 6 Months, where the Degrassi kids reflect on the 6 month anniversary of JT's passing. What was really nice is that we finally got to see more of Paige's reaction to JT's passing, which we didn't really get in the show.
I hope you guys don't mind. I was away at school. I couldn't come back for the funeral, but I just wanted. I had to come.
He would have been glad you're here, Paige.
Little fetus was a big part of my growing up.
With these higher stakes and more story-driven minisodes, Stephen Stone said the web series was becoming a huge hit. It was continuously becoming more and more popular, he said, and like the website, it was another way for fans to engage even further with the characters. Not only were these airing on Degrassi.tv, you could also find them on The N. This was the American broadcaster that aired Degrassi, and they've always fully embraced the show, airing full marathons of every episode ever, having interactive games on their website, interviews with the cast, meet and greets, set tours. It was insane. While the show was starting season 8 of the series, the minis were on season 4, and they were becoming incredibly successful. So The N decided to do something incredible. They decided to host a contest. If you could come up with the best minisode idea voted on by other fans, you could win a trip to the set of Degrassi. It was 2008. Degrassi was actually receiving some of its lowest views to date, but the web content was still doing extremely well. Kids were increasingly spending more time online, and websites like YouTube, Facebook, and MySpace were growing faster than ever. And if you were a Degrassi fan, you were likely spending your time on Degrassi.tv or TheN.com. That's the case for Ashley Sadow and her best friend Jess from North Hollywood, California. The two had met at a Degrassi meet and greet event and immediately became best friends, doing absolutely everything together, including entering Degrassi contests for The N. I connected with Ashley online about a year and a half ago, and she told me some pretty cool stories of visiting the set, meeting the cast, and her life as a Degrassi fan. But it wasn't until I posted a trivia game on my Instagram story that she told me one of the coolest stories I've ever heard of. Last week, I interviewed Paula Brancati, who played Jane on Degrassi, and she starred in one of the most iconic minisodes ever made called Pirates of the Cafeterabean. Essentially, a what-if the Degrassi kids were pirates. This minisode is so popular that Stephen Stone actually lists it as one of his top favorites in his life's memoir. I posted a trivia question about it, and Ashley got it wrong. So she replied to me and said, "That's embarrassing, because I actually came up with this minisode." And I said, "How quickly can you get in front of a microphone?" So here's my conversation with Ashley Sadow as she tells us about her and her best friend Jess, who created minisodes for Degrassi. Ashley, one of the reasons you're here today is because you messaged me on Instagram and you were like, "Hey, I have this really cool fan story." Well, you were a lot more humble about that. I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you just sat on this." So yes. I want to talk a little bit more about it. I want to try to go through it beat by beat and we'll see what kind of details we can pull out of you because this is just so freaking cool. So can you paint a picture for us of how an opportunity came up that you could help pitch an idea for a minisode on Degrassi?
Yes. So in, I believe it was 2008, I was very into The N, and like their website used to be super interactive and super awesome. And they'd have contests all the time. And one of the contests was for fans to pitch ideas for what if mini webisodes. And there was like a time period where you can just submit as many ideas as you wanted. And I submit a ton of them. And then maybe like a day or two before submissions close, I'm like dead asleep. And then I just wake up and I'm like, what if they were pirates? And like, because pirates were like super like the thing at the time, like people loved pirate stuff. And now I don't care about pirates, but I'm like, but this might win. So I rolled out of bed, got on their website and submitted that idea, went back to bed, didn't really think about it again until when they actually like released, I don't remember how many they picked, maybe like 30-ish that people could vote on, and that was one of them. And I was like, of all my millions of ideas, the one I like the least is the one that they picked, but I'm like, I'm so amped. Like, I want to see this because it's going to be hilarious, right?
Yeah.
So what they had to do is they would like pair up just two random of the ideas and you would like click one or the other and it would just give you random pairs and they would show the leaderboard. And I don't remember what the timeline was, but it was maybe like a week or something where like they would just let people vote and then whatever the top three were would get made and the top one got to actually go to the set. And mine was leading the whole time. And my friend Jess had one in there. That one was What If Peter Made a Movie, which I was all about that because I loved Peter. Because something's wrong with me. I love a villain. So Peter was like my favorite, like the second he came on screen. Also had the good spiky hair, but that's another story. So yeah, so those two were leading. And then some random stranger, I don't know who she was, hers or What If Craig and Ashley Got Married. That one was number three. Consistently, like the whole time that was the order. Like the night before the contest ended, me and Jess like went to bed and were like, it's all good. Like we got this. And then we wake up and it's flipped. Her, the random person's is number one. And we're like, devastated and heartbroken, like no, it's still getting made and that's awesome, but like we want to go to the set so bad. And like we couldn't believe it. We were so disappointed, like excited that it's getting made, but it's like we want to go, like it's a once in a lifetime thing, right? Yeah, so that's how that went down. But my dad was going on a trip to our family reunion. We live in California, so he's going into Buffalo, New York. He's like, do you want to go? And I was like, can we go to Toronto while we're there? Just like, cause like I need some poutine and some pizza probably. So, yeah. So he's like, sure. Like it's like an hour and a half drive. Let's go. And I was like, you know what? Like I'm going to just email Epitome and ask if we can visit the set, even though I know it's like a closed set, but my mom was like, just ask. The worst they can say is no. So I did. And someone got back to me and they were like asking me a couple questions, like, oh, why do you want to come here? Like, who's your favorite character on this? And then she decided that she's like, okay, you sound like pretty legit and like, come on in, like you can come. And I was like, what? Okay. So then the struggle here is my friend Jess was a minor at the time and like her mom, like they can't afford to like this, like everyone come to my reunion, you know? So we had like this whole shenanigan of like, we got to get her birth certificate so she can cross the border and she can go with us and like all this stuff. All that works out and we get to go and it is just like a miracle and amazing. So that's how we ended up there.
That is not, I can't believe it. I really believe that if anyone ever has a dream about Degrassi, just ask because they're the nicest people ever. So then it worked out that all three of you got to tour the set, all the top three winners.
Yes. So I know that the person that won, that legitimately won, she was there before us because they were telling us about it and they actually were working on editing those mini webisodes and we were there. So we got to watch like the footage of them, like the rough edits of it, which was super cool. So we got to see it before everyone else.
Oh my, you got to watch them edit yours?
They edited all three. So we got to see like the edits that they had so far while we were there. So yeah.
Super were you dying? Cool.
Yes. I mean, the whole thing was like, I'm dying. This isn't happening. Like, pinch me. Are we actually here? Am I going to wake up and I'm like back at home? Like, it was amazing.
That is so freaking cool. Okay. How does it feel to know that you came up with an idea for one of the most like well-loved and well-watched mini-sodes for Degrassi?
That is just like exposed my brain. So maybe like within the last year, as I follow Shane Kippel on Instagram, I remember him posting like, this is one of my favorites to do. And I was like, I did that. Like, that's, I don't know. It's surreal. And like to think that I had any sort of hand in anything that Degrassi's done is just amazing. Yeah.
That's incredible. One thing about now is online content is constantly being pumped out on online all the time. But was that the case for 2008 or the era that you were watching the show? Was Degrassi kind of a standout show for doing this kind of stuff?
I think so. I think pretty much anything that was airing here on The N was like super like emphasis on the internet stuff and webisodes and extras online. And they used to have the N podcast where every Friday night, I think, and they would post blogs, like very interactive. Like Degrassi was their like main like bread and butter show on The N. So like a lot of stuff like that, but other shows, like not so much, like there wasn't a whole lot going on online with them. So definitely Degrassi like trailblazed that, I think.
I'd also love to ask you a little bit about Jess's experience, because from what I understand, Jess is no longer with us. Would you mind telling us a little bit about what you thought that moment of getting to go to the set and seeing her her idea get made would mean to her?
Oh my goodness. So she was like over the moon. Like, so she's 6 years younger than me. So like when we met, she was only 13 and I was 19. And that's like a really big age gap for that time, but like it just worked because, like I told you, like I'm kind of a late bloomer, and she had to grow up a little faster because she had fibromyalgia. So she, you know, and out of school, managing whatever. So it just worked. So I know that like our dream together was always like, we got to get to the set one day. Somehow, somewhere we're going to do this. Like she always was convinced that she would go. And she also always said like, I feel like I'm going to be back here one day. Now we didn't get back there, but I mean, for all we know, she could be haunting the set. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I know that it, like, it was the highlight of her life. Like if you knew Jess, you knew like Degrassi and all her stories. And that's like her thing. It was just like the best time. And it was just, you know, a miracle that we got to go. And I'm so glad that we got to go in her too short lifetime, first of all. But like the fact that, I mean, like, I don't want to say like I made it happen because we both made it happen. But like the fact that it all came together and it all worked and she got to go, I mean, priceless, absolutely priceless for her.
Oh, that is incredible. I mean, I think you led the charge on that. You're the one who arranged it. So when it was going, when you guys were having, you know, this battle online, was it kind of like a mutual understanding that whoever won, you would also take the other person? Yes. Okay, cool. So whether you were in first or second, you're like, who cares, baby? We're getting our minisodes, baby.
Yeah, like we're going. I don't care. Like if we have to spend $1 million to get the other person there, like I don't remember. I think it was like a trip for two. So like we would have had to have someone else come with us because she was a minor. I couldn't just take her on myself across the country to another country, actually. So yeah, like whatever it was, we were going to make it happen if one of us won. And that was kind of the deal for any time there was a contest, because there had been other contests that we didn't win, obviously. So yeah, that was always like, if one of us goes, we both go. Like, that's just it, no matter what.
Oh, that is so cool. I'm so happy that you like reached out to be like, hey, we're number 2 and 3. Can we come as well? Because that's incredible that in the end, all three of you got to get your episodes made and go see the show. That's absolutely insane.
It was absolutely magical. Like I can't even, it doesn't feel real sometimes. Like even, you know, 15 years later thinking about it, like that happened and we have the pictures to prove it and it happened.
Thank you so much to Ashley for doing this interview together. If you want to hear the rest of our interview, you can find it on patreon.com/DegrassiKid, where I release bonus content every Wednesday. But for now, let's talk about the minisodes that aired alongside season 9 of Degrassi, The Next Generation. Season 9 gives us Forgetting Sav Bhandari, about Sav and Anya's final breakup. We get a mini where Bruce the Moose literally says, hey, everyone in the Studes has hooked up with someone else except for Jane. So Spinner, you should totally let me get with your girlfriend. We get an internet love story between Declan and Holly J, the budding couple of the season, and the second return of JT York. Degrassi has a rule that if you pass away on the show, you can never come back. Not in a flashback, not in a memory, not in any brand new scene. And that's because that's not real life. If you pass away, you're gone for good. And that's a very real experience that some teenagers might be dealing with for the very first time. But in a mini, you can do whatever you want. You can play. In this mini titled Ghost of Degrassi's Past, JT returns to the school to help Holly J with Degrassi's holiday pageant. What's really fun is that it gives us some nods about the upcoming season. Similar to how Sean returned in a mini and then really returned in the show, in this minisode, Jenna plays a pregnant mother Mary and Casey gets in trouble for stealing her fake baby, which is a basketball.
You told me to play basketball!
The minisode Ghost of Degrassi's Past was so iconically loved for its crossover between JT York and Holly J. Sinclair and a reference to JT's fateful night.
My worst holiday? Who are you?
You're gonna have to trust me on this one. I know all about you and your friends.
They aren't my friends. They don't even really like me. Any one of them would stab me in the back.
Ooh, been there. Not pretty.
In the end, JT helps Holly J see what a Scrooge she's being and brings back some joy to Degrassi. But then things start to change. Up until now, Degrassi's been pretty ahead of the curve when it comes to online content, making videos and engaging with fans online. But now the rest of the world has caught up to them, and there's some crazy stuff happening behind the scenes. How does this change the world of minisodes and online content when now everyone else is doing it too? Season 9, Degrassi was almost canceled, but then Teen Nick, or The N, saved the day and not only brought back Degrassi, but ordered double the amount of episodes from them. Now, Linda Skyler was getting back her telenovela or her soap opera style Canadian TV show. But the online atmosphere was starting to change. Now Degrassi.tv would redirect you to MuchMusic.com, where you could watch the show, buy merch, and hang out in live streams with the cast. MySpace was becoming a thing of the past. YouTube was one of the most popular websites. And now we were all live tweeting on Twitter alongside the Degrassi cast and characters. In 2010, Degrassi had made almost 30 brand new Twitter accounts just for the fictional characters on their show. Sometimes we'd watch Degrassi on TV, and at the same time, the characters would be tweeting about what's happening in the show. For example, when hashtag StuffClaireSays was happening on Degrassi, it would then pop up on our phones and Twitter feeds. Or we'd see @FunAdam and @RealEli tweet about their plans to play video games all summer long. Previously, Degrassi was making web content called Degrassi On Set, where they'd release mini clips of behind-the-scenes content. But now, the kids were bringing personal cameras and cell phones to the set and posting it directly on Twitter. One of the biggest moments was a behind-the-scenes video where Monroe Chambers makes his Twitter account, posts his first tweet, and immediately goes viral.
Right, well, now. Well, what do you know? Monroe Chambers is getting Twitter.
What do you guys like better?
I like the underscore Monroe.
Aizen?
I like
the one. Underscore or one?
Just sure.
I like the Monroe. I think
the Monroe. Underscore Monroe?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, now avert your eyes for the password.
Okay.
One, two, create my account.
Yay, it works! Oh. Whoa. Ah.
Okay.
What's the first tweet?
So much pressure now.
All right, so right there, trending in Canada, Monroe Chambers is number one. He's having a little bit of a freak out right now.
That's kind of cool. And I'm fifth in the world.
Yeah.
Aw, Monroe's calling his daddy to tell him.
We got this recorded in history, so
yeah,
you're going to watch
this. It is recorded right here. Monroe Chambers, number one in Canada.
That video was just filmed by the Degrassi cast in the green room while they're on break from shooting the show. They didn't need script writers, they didn't need a set, professional cameras, they didn't need someone to post it on a $1.2 million website for them. They just recorded it and posted it on their social media. So with all this in mind, I think that's why you start to see a decline in the minisodes. In season 10, we do get a silly Halloween series called Monster Moon. It features Eli as a vampire, Drew specifically as Edward Cullen, and Fiona as a man-eating mime. They're about 30-second clips that are very silly and follow the characters in crazy Halloweenified situations.
My oh my, Claire Edwards. When you told me you were going to be a zombie for the dance, I didn't think you'd look so rapturous.
Well, hello! Feisty little undead mix, aren't you?
Yeah, Claire.
Are you serious? I'm trying to eat you. Don't you see that this is not supposed to be sexy?
You want to cuddle first?
Come on, I'll let you eat my brain. It'll be hot.
They released two more minisodes this season. One of them is called Love Is, which follows the Lover's Lunch era of Degrassi in season 10. These are minisodes where they ask the characters Fiona, Adam, Dave, and Anya what they think love is. And each of them could easily be a part of the show because they follow the storylines that are happening on screen. For example, they show Fiona and Adam secretly gushing over each other. Dave is crushing on Sadie, and Anya daydreams about Dr. Chris. And Unstoppable is one of my favorite minis because it follows Fiona, Bianca, Jenna, and Claire as they join the Power Squad and become cheerleaders. But to me, these minisodes feel a lot different. Monster Moon is only 30 seconds long. Love is a straight-to-camera shot where the Degrassi kids deliver a monologue about love. And Unstoppable is the most impressive with a full storyline and inclusion of so many characters. But it doesn't live up to the same hype as the minisodes that pioneered the idea of web content. Around season 6 of Degrassi, they released 19 minisodes, and each of them were extremely different from each other. Around season 7, they were putting so much emphasis on web content that the minis got their own Halloween special. And even around season 8, they received their first online Webby Award for The Curse of Degrassi, a 30-minute minisode that parodied the movie Carrie, but with Rick haunting Degrassi because of his paint and feathers incident. This award was voted on by the audience. Steven Stone said, "We were thrilled to receive this award because it speaks to the incredible loyalty of the Degrassi fan base. It's awesome to look back and see just how far our company has come along in producing Degrassi's web content." But now, they just don't seem like they're getting the same attention as they once were. Every year, production on the minisodes was growing and growing, and now it seemed to stop and maybe even go backwards. There's a few things that could be happening to cause this. Is it because the show's production doubled and they just didn't have time for minisodes anymore? Is it because the social media landscape was changing and we were getting so much content that Degrassi minisodes just weren't special anymore? Or is it because we found other ways to connect with our favorite cast members and characters that we just didn't need the minis? I mean, we were also getting 40 episodes a season. We were getting hangouts at Much Music. We were getting every episode ever marathons on Teen Nick. Did we need more Degrassi? Honestly, I don't know if we'll ever really know the final answer to this question. Maybe it's bits and pieces of all of these questions, or maybe it's something else completely different. But what I do know is that when season 11 starts to air, the Degrassi minisodes are about to change.
And now, Teen Nick and Playtech Sport present the all-new minisode Degrassi, the Power Play.
Season 11 gives us only one minisode, the Power Play, sponsored by Playtext. Playtext is a tampon company, and if you watch the show, you can see their tampon machines in the girls' bathroom because they were an official sponsor of the series. Here's the idea for the minisode. Ali Bandari wants to fluff up her resume and start a brand new club at Degrassi. She doesn't know what it is yet, but she knows she wants it to be physical. So she teams up with Tori Santamaria, who helps her bring the idea to life. She also relies on Sav's friend Paige Michaelchuk to help throw the project together, because it sounds an awful lot like the Spirit Squad, or the Power Squad, as she likes to correct them. Sav, who graduated the year before, also makes an appearance because we find out that he and Paige hooked up in Degrassi Goes Hollywood.
Thank you for coming. The second I told Sav about my little predicament, he recommended you right away.
I got his call.
It's funny, he didn't even know you guys were that close.
We weren't. Till that winter in Los Angeles.
Oh.
We had a thing.
Oh, yeah, that is something I didn't need to know.
Yeah, a little known fact.
Well, now that we've all shared, we could just get back to
it. You know, even though Sav is a few years younger, he really knew how to treat a woman.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, TMI.
So if we could just get back to the subject at hand.
Right. Okay, hon, you want to show them you've got what it takes to organize this league? Well, I have the perfect plan for you.
In the end, Ali manages to pull together a flash dance for the school, which took place in the cafeteria. What's fun about this, though, is, again, it sparked a lot of behind-the-scenes content. It was so much fun. I mean, for the very first time, everyone on Degrassi was doing something silly together. They were all dancing, even though hardly any of them were dancers. The actors who played Drew, Eli, Owen, Imogen, Bianca, Adam, Jenna, Connor, they were all doing this synchronized dance together and learning choreography. Here's a clip that they made from behind the scenes.
So this is my first mini ever.
And it's my first mini too.
And we get to have it together.
What are you filming there? What's going on?
So we are shooting the webisode today, and it involves a flash mob, which is super fun. We've never done that before.
I would argue that the behind the scenes video with the cast was way more fun to watch and laugh at than the actual miniseries itself. We were able to feel so much closer to the cast in a whole new way. Now we were getting videos and photos directly from the set every single day. Now we were closer to the cast than ever. What's amazing about technology in 2011 is that Degrassi fans didn't have to worry about 15-minute wait times. Those shaky camera movements weren't lagging our screens. Instead, they were being made because a kid was laughing behind the camera. And we were getting so much scripted Degrassi content that we just wanted to see the cast for who they really are. Real teenagers, just like us. Season 12 of Degrassi had no official minisodes. But we had lots of behind-the-scenes content on their YouTube page. They took us inside photo shoots, script readings, rehearsals, filming days, and we even went on a shopping trip with Annie Clark and Christine Prosperi, or Degrassi's Fiona and Imogen. Stefan Brogren started the principal's office, where he talked for 2 to 3 minutes about each episode of Degrassi, and quickly it was becoming apparent that short-form, scripted content just wasn't engaging anymore. Now people were vlogging and sharing clips of their day, live tweeting their every thought and posting selfies on Instagram. The online world was changing. But Degrassi had one problem in season 12. Their most popular character of all time had just graduated, and there wasn't a reason for him to stay at the school. In fact, he had been set up as a smart and aspiring film student who dreamed of leaving Degrassi and heading to NYU. Sure, we could follow him there, but the last time Degrassi went off to college, they faced their lowest ratings ever and almost got canceled. We loved characters like Marco Paganelli, we loved Emma, Manny, and Liberty, but college and university life just doesn't come with the same stakes. It's boring to be a teenager and watch a bunch of 20-somethings sit around and worry about their adult problems. But everyone loved this character. So what were they gonna do? There's no doubt that Eli Goldsworthy is easily one of the most popular characters there ever was on Degrassi. Monroe Chambers joined the show in season 10 and immediately became the fan favorite character of the series. I mean, he was literally trending number one in Canada because he made a Twitter account. But keeping him around was a challenge. Some of the lowest rated episodes on Degrassi are when Spinner and Jimmy open up a t-shirt shop, when Marco is addicted to gambling, becomes a prostitute, and gets a bunny because he's lonely, or when Ellie is chasing around Jesse at the core. It would be a big risk to follow Eli off to college. We can show him at college, absolutely, but we already know that introducing a bunch of brand new characters for Eli to interact with is probably going to be a huge flop. We want to see him at Degrassi. So Degrassi had to ask themselves, how can we keep Eli Goldsworthy for the fans who love him without making our main episodes so boring? That's when Degrassi brings back their minisodes and introduces Eli's Dorm Life, a series of short minisodes about Eli's life at college with two of his roommates, Lenore and JJ. Eli's character was so beloved that he's the only character to ever get an entire miniseries for himself. He's the first to get in a minisode, and he's the first to get a minisode that is completely canon. The writers agreed that everything that happens in this mini actually happened in the real lives of the characters. And that's huge. There's a big crossover between the show and Eli's dorm life. It follows Eli as he deals with life in college and some of the things that he talks about with Claire. He faces a masturbating roommate named JJ. He gets handcuffed to a bed by Lenore, and he gets wasted during a game of Never Have I Ever. Now, they could have Eli grow up a little bit without having to worry about a full season arc about life at college. Instead, we get fun little minisodes that give us a glimpse at what he's up to. This minisode is a huge deal because it's also the very first time we're introduced to characters who only exist in the minisodes. Eli's roommate Lenore is first introduced in the web series, and later she's mentioned in the show, but never seen. And his other roommate, JJ, really doesn't appear in the show at all, outside of just being called Eli's roommate. To the point that if you only watch the main show, you might have no idea who JJ even is. The craziest part about this era of minisodes is that randomly, in between Eli's dorm life, Degrassi releases a minisode called Dress You Up. This is actually a partnership with the Royal Bank of Canada, who was a big sponsor of Degrassi at the time. The minisode aims to teach young people about credit card debt and how to save up money. But this minisode was introduced by the hosts of Much Music and was far more about a sponsored partnership than being an actual official web-based minisode for Degrassi. In this story, Maya needs a dress for the big dance, so she ends up using her mom's credit card without telling her. Her mom is obviously upset and tells Maya that she needs to come up with a way to pay it back because credit card debt racks up faster than you expect. So Maya gets a part-time job dressing up and dancing as a hot dog for a local business. Then we catch back up with Eli at his dorm, and he's trying to move on from his breakup with Claire by writing about their relationship. Again. Eli's dorm life actually had such a high production value and success rate that it temporarily brought the minisodes back to life. Season 14 of Degrassi had the longest minisode ever made, called Champagne Supernova. But also keep in mind, Degrassi itself was no longer producing 40 episodes a season, and they were becoming more like a normal production again. Champagne Supernova was a 10-part series that followed Zig and Miles as they wake up handcuffed together and need to figure out what happened. Imagine it as a what if the hangover happened at Degrassi. This mini follows Miles and Zig as they retrace their steps and interview the other Degrassi characters about their big night out, slowly putting the pieces together and answering questions like, what happened? Why do we have a dog? Why does that dog have pink hair? And who gave Miles a black eye? In the end, we find out that Winston handcuffed them together because they were fighting over Maya, and the two finally reconcile and make up with each other. And then that's it. That's the last minisode we ever get from Degrassi. Instead, we start getting a web series called Degrassi TV. In the show, we actually see them create Degrassi TV from the ground up. Imogen pitches it to Drew Torres, the school's student council president, and she auditions anchors for the show, like Winston and Becky. Degrassi TV continues to be an integral part of life at Degrassi on the show. Drew Torres dismembers the club when Winston criticizes his job as student council president. Imogen fights to air a segment about Degrassi's sexist dress code. And Becky tries to interview Zoe about the effects of teen drinking, but later finds out that Zoe's so hesitant because she was assaulted. On screen, we'd watch the kids talk about making their latest episode. Then, we as the audience could go online and actually watch the episode they put together. Let's hear how Imogen Marino describes it when she pitches it to the school president, Drew Torres.
Thinking 10 minutes every morning after announcements, a combination of pre-taped segments and snazzy news desk pieces, super professional styles. I've already written the theme song, dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-TV.
Now, Degrassi TV is an awesome idea for a club, Imogen, especially because it won't cost student council a cent.
Yep, thanks to that media grant. So, do you approve of the club?
Congratulations, you are officially the head of DTV.
This web series was released on Degrassi's official YouTube channel. The idea was that they'd pick a topic they cover on the show, like body image, the pressure to drink and do drugs, sexual identity, and usually at least one silly episode, like Hidden Talents. Most of the episode focused on interviewing the Degrassi characters, like Drew, Eli, Claire, about their perspective on each topic. But these minisodes also stand out because they were the very first ones to be interactive. Viewers could send in videos and talk about their experience with drugs, body image, and the pressure to drink at parties. I actually submitted a few times, but never made the cut. How iconic, though, would it be if right now I played a clip of high school me being in a Degrassi mini? That would be amazing. But anyway, I didn't get picked. They did a second season of Degrassi TV, which aired during the Next Class era. This time, they focused on sexual consent, online hate, Photoshop, feminism, divorce, and how to talk to your crush. Then, Degrassi started to experiment all over again. Now they had a web show called Degrassi Group Chat, where the real-life cast members went out and visited schools across Canada. They would talk about issues from the show. Jamie Blah, who played Yael, talked to kids about gender identity. Soma, who played Goldie, talked to kids about how to get involved in their community. And Chelsea and Sarah, or Esme and Frankie, talked with teens about dating and relationships. In my opinion, this era is pretty much the Degrassi Talks of the social media generation. If you don't know what Degrassi Talks is, basically, back in 1992, right after Degrassi High ended with schools out, the Degrassi kids picked up cameras, microphones, and other film equipment and traveled all over Canada interviewing real teenagers about the stuff they experienced on the show. Spike's actress talked to the teens about sex, Wheels talked about alcohol abuse, and Caitlin talked about sexuality. In my opinion, Degrassi Group Chat is the exact same show, just 25 years later. Then, Degrassi came out with a third web series called Degrassi All Inclusive. If that sounds familiar, it's because it's the name of the video blog that Hunter, Yael, Baz, and Vijay actually talk about on the show. Just like Degrassi TV, a fun little nod to the OG website, by the way, we'd now see the Next Class kids make their own show in Degrassi, and then we could go online and watch it as it was made. This was completely scripted and didn't include any fans of the show this time. Instead, it went like this. Baz and Yael would read submissions sent in by the kids at Degrassi. It was a fictionalized version of events, but still focused on talking about real issues. For example, Frankie wrote in about her experience being sexually harassed by Zig and Tiny. They talked about how hot she is on a scale of 1 to 10, commented on the length of her skirt, and reassured her, "Hey, what's wrong? We both would still totally make out with you." When challenged on it, the boys asked Frankie why she's overreacting. They were just saying nice things about her. She retorted, "Yeah, about my body when I'm trying to study." She was so upset that she tanked her exam and reached out to Baz and Yael for advice. Yael often takes the sympathetic route, while Baz pushes back and disagrees with the situation. In this case, Baz says it was no big deal, and Frankie should take it as a compliment. Yael says, "Oh yeah? Well, how about we flip the script?" This time, Baz is the one who is trying to study, while Frankie and Lola pressure him to take off his shirt and show off his body. He obviously becomes uncomfortable and sees why Frankie is so upset. Each minisode ends with a PSA from the Degrassi cast saying why the topic was wrong and how to get help if it happens to you. Here's the actors who played Tiny and Frankie talking about sexual harassment at the end of this all-inclusive episode.
Hi, I'm Sarah Waysglass.
And I'm Richard Walters, and we're from Degrassi Next Class.
As you just saw, Frankie was upset because her body was being raided like an object.
When in fact, both Frankie and Boz are more than their bodies. They're living, thinking people.
Sexual comments can make people feel devalued, and they're actually a form of harassment and bullying.
Everyone should be made to feel comfortable in their bodies and not be objectified by anyone.
If you find yourself in Frankie's shoes, tell the person to stop.
And when harassed, make sure you report it to an adult.
So, why does this even matter? Why does a bunch of random online video content mean so much in the history of Degrassi? Well, for Stephen Stone, it meant a shot at redemption. Stephen was able to finally prove that his original idea with Raja really meant something. For Stefan Brogren, it was the opportunity to start a career in directing that would go on to change his life. And for the actors, writers, and creatives on set, it was a chance to play. The Degrassi minis were taken seriously from the very beginning. Even if they were doing silly things like Emma being Jay and Jay being Emma, or what-ifs about pirates and vampires and zombies, the Degrassi team still put their heart into these episodes, and it made an impact with fans. Degrassi has always embraced and accepted us, and loved this show right along with us, and the minisodes are a clear example of that. Stephen did not have to advocate for a $1.2 million website just so we could blog and chat with each other. Stefan didn't have to make a miniature short film when they just asked him to make a short video about Degrassi and Halloween. And people like Raymond Ablack or Lauren Collins didn't have to come all the way back to Degrassi just for three lines and a one-minute appearance in an online minisode. Everyone who works on this show loves this show, and they love it just as much as we do. In my opinion, there's some shows that just don't care about themselves or the connection they make to their audience. In my opinion, shows like 13 Reasons Why just don't have the same connections with their fans because they didn't take the same level of care and concern about the safety of their audience. In my opinion, shows like Riverdale never took themselves seriously, so why should we? And shows like Stranger Things market themselves as being so huge and massive and high budget that the actors become almost inaccessible to fans. But Degrassi always cared about its audience and the impact it could make with storytelling. They invested in the cast to make sure they understood the impact they were making with their episodes and made them part of the fun when they started making minisodes together. Degrassi and the entire team behind it understood the importance of this show to fans and that even a minisode should be taken seriously. Degrassi is a show that's been on the air for over 40 years. They've had millions of viewers all over the world across many generations. Degrassi could easily give itself up to become a more American production. They could focus on shock value and making more money, but it doesn't want to. It wants to stay with you and be a show that's there for you whenever you need it, even if it's just a way to escape online through a minisode. And when the show was at its peak of popularity with millions of viewers and a huge production value, their focus was still on connecting and engaging with you. Degrassi wanted to give you over 100 minisodes. They wanted to give you more JT, more Liberty being Paige and Paige being Liberty, more pirates in the cafeteria. The reason I love this show is because it's the only show I've ever watched that made me feel like it actually loved me back. Like it loved Degrassi just as much as I did. And that's why it's so important to discuss the history and impact of Degrassi's minisodes. I want to say a huge thank you to Stephen Stone for his book, Whatever It Takes. It was a huge help in researching this episode. A shout out to Degrassi fan Ashley Sadal for sitting down and doing an interview with me and all the Degrassi fans who helped me research this episode. I asked you what your favorite minisodes were, and I think the resounding answer is all of them. If you want more bonus content from this episode, then visit patreon.com/DegrassiKid, where we release bonus content every Wednesday, and the Degrassi Kid superfans got to hear the episode first, by the way. But for now, let's say thank you to the Patreon subscribers who even made this episode possible. We are sending love to Sarah Merritt, Sam Resnick, Lizzie Brokaw, and Jess Paseko, who all joined the Degrassi Kid Patreon for the very first time. Thank you so much. Welcome to the club. We're also giving a shout out to our Degrassi students student council team on Patreon. We got Amber, Nicholas, Sarah J, and my best friend, Stevie Jarawa, who go above and beyond every single month to make this podcast possible. And of course, our fellow Degrassi kids on Patreon, Amy, Alana, Becca, Brittany, Chantel, Christine, Charlie, Chrissy, Daniela, Dave, Degrassi CSI, Evie, Ethan, Emily, Eugene, Jasper, Jamie, Jay, Joey, Joe, Jackie, Jolene, Catherine, Kat, Courtney, Kristen, Crystal, Kylea, Lizzie, Lindsay, Maddie, Mark, Mackenzie, Megan, Mike, Mina, Molly, Rachel, Randy, Rebecca, Racine, Shane, Sierra, Sunita, Shannon, Stephanie, and Nixon. From the Degrassi Generations Facebook page, I am living my dreams because of you. I just ranted about Degrassi minisodes for an hour, and people listened because of you. Thank you so much for giving me that. I love you. See you soon. Bye.